Akaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namasreshtam Manamapi Satchiputra Matra Surupam Rupam Tasyagrajamurupurin Matarim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaram Ho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This purport is presented in two paragraphs with two main points. The first one is about the apparent deathlessness of the inhabitants of the higher planets, which I already discussed briefly while going through the purport. The second point is about the duty of the head of state. Srila Prabhupada here doesn't say king. He often says king, but he says the duty of the state executive head to punish offenders against the orders, the codes of God. Srila Prabhupada says state executive head because he, not using the word king, he states that the responsibility that was there with kings in the days when there were actual kings, that devolves upon state executive heads of the modern day by whatever means they get there. They may get there by vote, but still they have the responsibility. And Srila Prabhupada points out that they don't usually, or they hardly ever discharge such a responsibility. Just like in India, there's been an election, new prime minister, has he sworn in yet? On Monday, okay. New prime minister in the offing, but no one had, as an election manipada, as part of their manifesto of their in the election, or no one expected them to have that. For instance, people could, just like you told me yesterday in Saudi Arabia, even the gold merchants leave their shop open when they go to the masjid, the mosque for namaz, for praying. So no one's making a manifesto that we'll leave the you can be perfectly free from any fear of thieves. There's a reason for that, why they can go even leaving the gold shop open. Well, you may say, well, they're very pious people there. Maybe they're all in the masjid. But one other reason is because of the much maligned Sharia law, in which if you are caught stealing, you get your hands chopped off. So you won't steal anymore, for sure. Well, at least it'll make it much more difficult for you to do so. So Srila Prabhupada has stressed this point from Srimad Bhagavatam, that is a duty of the king to punish. And you may say, well, that's not very saintly. I mean, where's the empathetic... What is that? Empathy and what is that? Punishment? What's this? We expect the saintly people to talk about compassion and love and empathy and all this kind of thing. Well, that kind of compassion and love and empathy, as sentimentally envisaged by sentimental people, that is more suitable for a brahmana. It is for a brahmana, it is saintly to be non-violent. And it's not saintly for him in most circumstances to be violent. For a kshatriya to be non-violent is not saintly. As Krishna told Arjuna, it was something like a Brahmana saying, I'm going to go and punish all the people. That's not saintly for him. As was pointed out to Dronacharya sometimes by his opponents on the battlefield. It's the kind of thing you shouldn't really say to him, but some did. That, what are you doing here anyway? You're supposed to be a Brahmana. You're not supposed to be fighting. But for a king to be non-violent, or for a leader of state, that means one who accepts the prestige, the honor, the taxes of the population. For him not to be violent, for him to, that means for him not to take the responsibility of protecting them, that is sinful. So in the age of Kali, where all good things day by day decrease, in the Bhagavatam, all good things are not mentioned. All good things are not mentioned, but in the Bhagavatam, it says that day by day, some of the things which decrease day by day are stated. That is, tatas chanudinam dharma satyam soksham kshama daya kalena balina rajan nang shantyayur balang smritihi. So some of the prominent factors which decrease daily in Kali Yuga due to the powerful influence of time are dharma, satyam. Do you all know what satyam means? Anyone doesn't know? If you don't know, now's your chance to learn. Satyam means truthfulness. Shocham. Do you all know what that means? Shocham, you won't know. It's a quality which in Bhagavatam says is conspicuous by its absence in brahmacharis. So that's one part of the Bhagavatam you shouldn't follow. It means cleanliness. And the word cleanliness in English doesn't really fit the understanding of shocham in Sanskrit, because it means cleanliness, purity. One way you can become unclean is not just to jump in a sewer, but just to have one of your relatives to die, and then you become ashoch. How about that? So, shocham. Satyam, shocham, kshama. Well, if you don't know satyam, you won't know this one also. It means tolerance, and not exactly tolerance in the sense of tolerate everything. Your kids are wild, and you just tolerate everything, and But it also means a tolerance of difficulties, tolerance of heat and cold, etc. Kshama daya, that means compassion. Kalena balena araya, lifespan, bodily strength, and also memory, which and mental strength in general. So, a philosophical understanding is that is also included. Intelligence decreases. Only in humans is it possible to even have a philosophical understanding. However much intelligence animals may have, there's no question of philosophy for animals. And dharma also means philosophical understanding, full meaning of dharma. Of course, the Mimamsakas, who are supposed to be the champions of dharma, they might disagree with that, but then they need a philosophy to establish their lack of philosophy. For them, it's just follow the rules and go to heaven, and then when you come back again, follow the rules and go to heaven again. And they're quite happy. Gata, gata, kama, kama, labhante. They think that's great. Coming and going. When your punya gets worn out, you come down again, and then you do more punya and you go up, and great. They think it's wonderful. Krishna points out this is stupid. But they have some kind of philosophy to try to promote that. So in this non-philosophical age, or an age in which philosophy is used to promote one's own selfish, greedy bestiality, actually, the word bestiality is a bit of an insult to the beasts, because often the humans are more bestial than the beasts. For instance, we don't find genocide among animals. Or otherwise, philosophy, I've been going through a philosophy of science course. I sometimes go through different things just to find out what these rascals are thinking. And one major point in it, practically the major point, is that it's always a problem in the philosophy of science to keep metaphysics out. And much of the endeavor, and as soon as they try to introduce something which is even slightly coming out of gross empiricism, then something, oh, can't do that. Metaphysics, no metaphysics, we can't allow that. And that which is considered real good science is that without any trace of metaphysics. Although they've seemed to have, I haven't come up to the beginning of the 20th century where it seems impossible to keep metaphysics out with special theory of relativity and quantum different interpretations of quantum theory. We live in a highly, just in case anyone hadn't noticed, we live in a highly non-philosophical age in which America is celebrated by Americans, and not all of them, as being the greatest country in the history of the world, because we all have the opportunity to, for instance, go to McDonald's and football games and drink Bud Light, which I just discovered yesterday. It's not. I thought it might mean light because it had less alcohol, but it's light because it's got less calories. So you can still get drunk out of your head without having to put on too much weight. That's the great advantage of Bud Light. I'm now enlightened about the great qualities of Bud Light. How they managed to make a beer that you can still get drunk but not get fat. So they tell you. So not only is modern America the epitome or the depths of actual human civilization, but they actually celebrate it. By America, it's a synonym for the Western world in general. So in such a society, to promote Krishna consciousness is obviously a great challenge. People are not interested in the truth. In fact, there was a Monty Python film some years ago, The Meaning of Monty Python and the Meaning of Life. So I thought I'd look up and find out what it's all about. What is there, do they have anything useful to say there? Absolutely nothing. At the end of the film, the conclusion is that, well, at least let's throw in a little obscenity. We might get a little pornography, and then we'll get more people coming and we'll make more money out of it. And that's their conclusion. So it's a great challenge. And people think, they have this idea that to be saintly, then you just have to, after generations of smiling gurus, who the main qualification to be a guru is to have a long beard, to smile, to hold a flower, and to talk all kinds of things which no one understands, but no one's really meant to understand, and which sounds nice. They've got no substance whatsoever. And that is, that's practically their qualification. So Srila Prabhupada is giving very valuable advice to human society that offenders should be punished. They must be punished. That is the duty of the head of state, to punish the offenders. It should be self-evident. Is that in the American Constitution? We take it as self-evident that offenders should be punished? It is probably so self-evident that they didn't state it. If it's so self-evident that all humans are created equal, then they wouldn't have had to state it anyway. I mean, in the American Constitution, it's not stated that we take it as self-evident that people should drink water. Axiomatic, the Sanskrit term is swata siddha. I don't know if you know that term. Self-evident. It's self-evident that you are a human being. Well, maybe that's not true in the spiritual. No, it doesn't. That's it. That's the philosophical. It doesn't require any proof. It's just obvious. The sun rises in the east. Yeah, something like that. Something that everyone can accept without having to demonstrate it or substantiate it. So, yeah, at these points in the American Constitution, if it's really so self-evident, then they wouldn't have had to state it at all. We take it as self... They didn't, for instance, write that we take it as self-evident that men are different from women. And now it's become non-evident because women want to be the same as men. So, what a challenge to present Krishna consciousness in a society in which you told me that Clinton, who am I talking about, Clinton? Bill or Hillary? Well, you don't know, because Hillary objected, as I was informed yesterday by Mahatma Prabhu, when she was called Ms. How do you pronounce that? M-S? Ms? Ms? Miss? Miss. Miss Clinton. Why Miss Clinton? Why is just Clinton? It's all the same. Why make a difference between men and women? In which men become women and women become men. In which it's so bizarre and absurd. How to present the highest truths where in a society in which things which were considered normal, not only unquestionable, but no one even would think of questioning them until a short time ago, have become rejected. And that which, if even anyone had suggested it, which any person in the whole world would cringe at the very thought of it, has now become... so much an accepted part of society that it is considered to be socially wrong, evil, and maybe illegal to even speak against it. As I found when I arrived in England a few years ago, and it was pasted all over the airport just to make sure everyone knew that in this country, it is an offense and you are liable to be arrested for speaking racistically or homophobically. Whereas a little over 100 years before that, if you spoke in favor of homosexuality, then you go to prison, as Oscar Wilde, the famous Irish poet, found out and wrote his famous ballad from Reading Jail. He was in there because of being what at the time would have been called a faggot or something else. But if you talk about faggots and you're not talking about things to put in a fire, well, maybe some people want to put homosexuals in a fire also. But the original meaning of faggot is something that's fuel for a fire. then if you say that nowadays, then you are liable to be arrested. Oh, maybe. Put a beep over that. I could get arrested. Well, don't bother. If I'm arrested, well, it's very dangerous to go to jail. You could get homosexually raped. Hare Krishna. So what a difficulty to present. When in a society in which sanity is illegal, how are you going to preach the highest truth? Such a difficulty, such a challenge. The other day, we were discussing what a challenge it is to present Varnashram. And maybe in the discussion of that, we somehow forgot what a challenge it is just to preach Krishna consciousness. What about Varnashram? Just to preach Krishna consciousness. And it's to the great credit of all of you that you're going out and preaching Krishna consciousness in this insane world. In India, there are difficulties like mosquitoes and heat and a lot of people, more people than you're used to being around, a different culture for all of you, but at least people are open to many of the tenets of Krishna consciousness. That's also changed a lot, as I stated yesterday, due to Western propaganda, which is enshrined in the Constitution, some of it. But in this puffed up Western world in which people, as does any society which becomes the most powerful, they think, well, we're the best. Nothing. We are self-evidently the best. Obviously the best because we smash everyone else. And everyone has to bow to us. That proves we're the best. So who will go and preach philosophy to Hitler or Stalin? They're not going to listen. They say we're so powerful. Who are we? Why should we listen to anyone? So to give a different idea to that which is the accepted and normal, that is extremely difficult. Of course, as you were saying yesterday, there are certain ideas which you can present, which are not part of the status quo, which they're an accepted alternative to the status quo. But there are other things which are non-acceptable. And one of them, there are many. If you read Srila Prabhupada's books, there are so many of them. For instance, his what is interpreted as misogyny. Misogyny, if you never heard of the word, it means hatred of women. It's a term I learned when it was first applied to me as being a misogynist for my hatred of women. And what was my crime? Well, repeating what Srila Prabhupada said. So I guess he's a misogynist, according to those who interpret that what is stated in Shastra to be for the benefit of all of human society and all living beings, including women, is that they have a socially subdued role in general. So that is supposed to go against the dignity of women, which is being demonstrated by, or was demonstrated up until recently by, for instance, Clinton, Hillary, just to clarify, charging all over the world, brokering Pax Americana, America's telling other countries what to do, and if you don't, we'll give you American foreign aid in the form that you might not like it, such as drones, etc. Instead of being a peaceful, happy grandmother surrounded by loving children and grandchildren, they think that's an affront to womankind. And in the meantime, you have children growing up, for instance, yourself, without a father, with a psychotic mother, and people think, well, this is great. You see, now women have got their freedom. Yes. Well, what can I say? It's insanity. But they take it to be sanity. So it's a great challenge to what to speak of teaching the highest truth to people. And of course, another great difficulty in teaching Krishna consciousness to in the Western world, Srila Prabhupada wrote a poem about this, Marikene Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness in America. And another great difficulty is people are totally besotted with sense gratification. So they're not fit candidates for this. But as Srila Prabhupada noted in that poem, the people, they're all overcome by rajas and tamas, the lower modes of nature. But if somehow they can give, submissive oral reception to the Bhagavatam repeatedly, then they can be purified. This was what Srila Prabhupada in this poem expressed as the keystone to establishing Bhagavad Dharma in America. And people have no idea of sadhan dharma or how to live in this world as a human being. And what to speak of Bhagavad Dharma. Once one is established in sadhan dharma, then he can come to the platform of jnana. And when one has come to the platform of jnana, then he can realize Brahma, the absolute truth. And then the highest stage is to be a Vaishnava. So Srila Prabhupada saw the key to this as regularly hearing the Bhagavatam. And within the Bhagavatam, we have all these principles of organization of human society also. So it is a great challenge. And Srila Prabhupada himself took up the challenge to spread Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Now in Los Angeles, there's a Prabhupada, what's it called? Srila Prabhupada Festival? Just called Srila Prabhupada Festival, yeah. So there are many of his disciples there. It's a great challenge to be a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Of course, sitting in a ceremony makes one a disciple. Or those who sat in a ceremony of initiation, they can be called disciples of Srila Prabhupada. But it's just like the word devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that anyone who chants the name Krishna once is a devotee. And we can all say, yeah, I've been a devotee for 40 years and when I first became a devotee. But to really be a devotee is a great challenge. It's not such a small thing to be a devotee. So to be a disciple of Srila Prabhupada is a great challenge because he himself gave us so many challenges. For instance, to double book distribution every year, which to do it, you might think, well, let's start off small. But that wasn't an option. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said to double it every year when he got news of unprecedented book distribution results, and he said to double it. So double it every year with the famous story of the chess. Well, that's not doubling. That's what would the mathematical term for that be? Where you double the first time, then raise to the power of 4 the next time. Exponential increase. Then if you put one grain on the first square, by the time you come to the 64th square, even if the whole earth was covered with grains of wheat, it wouldn't be enough. So double is something just about conceivable, but to do that you have to increase the number of devotees also. There might come a saturation point in which there might be all the people in the world have all the books. But that, Srila Prabhupada set challenges to establish Varnashram, great challenge. To preach Krishna consciousness in every town and village We're still a long way away from that. There probably a lot of people in San Diego have never heard of Hare Krishna. What do you think? So, what to speak of the towns and villages all around? It's a great challenge. What's the biggest challenge for all of us individually? What do you think? Staying in Krishna consciousness, to control the mind, being patient. These are all parts of it, but what I'm looking for is to be a pure devotee of Krishna. All you said, it's a great challenge. We're talking about bringing others to Krishna consciousness, but ourselves to be a pure devotee of Krishna. It's a great challenge that we have to work on at every moment. Some other points. How are we doing for time? Still, what? It's supposed to be 8:30 finishing? Oh, I see. I just presumed it was 9 o'clock. No one was ingracious enough to correct me. So we find that, all great leaders, how are they great? To state a tautology, if you don't know what the word is, you could look it up later. No one is great by being mediocre. I heard many years ago, maybe it's in one of the Vyasa Puja books, that Srila Prabhupada was addressing a meeting of his leading disciples and said that you have now by Krishna's grace, you have all become great. So now you go out and make others great. So the challenge is to be great, actually. And in Krishna, in actual greatness means to understand one's own insignificance and understanding that to preach Krishna consciousness, which is a challenge. We just discussed a little bit about the great challenge of preaching Krishna consciousness, the great challenge to be a pure devotee. If we're actually honest, at least I can say in my case, if we actually examine ourselves and see what is the difference between our present situation and that of an actual pure devotee of Krishna, we can realize what a great challenge it is to be a pure devotee. So Srila Prabhupada kindly taught us the process. There is a process to become a pure devotee. We often hear a lot about Srila Prabhupada's mercy, which is good. We should hear a lot about Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But we should also understand that his mercy, it's not just something automatic, well, you just have to believe in Jesus, and Jesus will deliver you. What about the ādo śraddhā tata sadhu saṅga tato nārta nevritti syat tato nishtā ruchis tata atā saktis tato ruchi tato what was it? Tato bhavo. No, I'm missing one. Tata prema abhyudanchati sada kana mayang prema pradu bhave bhavet kramaha. There is a step-by-step process, beginning with initial faith. And actually, there's something before that, but that's considered not really. Faith, initial faith, then associating with devotees, taking up the process of devotional service, becoming free from all unwanted things in the heart. Anartha nivritti syat tato ruchi. Then some taste for devotional, attachment to devotional service, genuine feelings, and then pure love of Krishna. So there is a process, and one has to become free, just like we say, one has to chant without offenses. How to attain prema bhakti? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, niraparadhe nama loile pai prema dhan. One can attain the treasure of love of Krishna by chanting the holy name of Krishna without offenses. So if we think, well, anyway, I don't have to bother about all these offenses, Prabhupada's mercy, but if it's just some kind of automatic thing that you just hang in there somehow or other and say, Jai Prabhupada, then why did Prabhupada take all the trouble to teach us all these points about becoming purified? Why did Krishna teach Arjuna Bhagavad Gita? Why didn't he just say, never mind Arjuna, I'm God and I love you. So he said, Krishna said to Arjuna, I love you, therefore I'm teaching you this process by which you can become purified. You have to do your part also. As the instructive joke goes, that Jewish joke, so we're told, that one Jew is complaining. See, I don't believe in God. He never favors me. If there's any God, he always favors us. See, my one friend won the lottery, another friend won the lottery, and I never win the lottery. So God doesn't favor me. And then one day God came to him and said, look, Shmo, let's make a deal. I'll make you win the lottery, but first of all, you have to buy a ticket. You didn't get the joke? He never even bought a ticket. How is he going to win the lottery? So it's like that. Prabhupada's willing to give his mercy, but not by misinterpreting him. It's easier just to recast Prabhupada as what is that called? The unmitigating mercy. What's that? There's a term, the unconditional mercy, unconditional compassion, causeless mercy. Yeah, there's something they say, unconditional. Well, it's not really conditioned. Prabhupada doesn't say that you have to do this and that, then I'll give my mercy. A major part of his mercy is that he teaches us the process of Krishna consciousness, which we are then supposed to, we have to show our willingness to be Krishna conscious. Otherwise, we all get the mercy of Krishna, but we get it in different ways. If we show no willingness to be Krishna conscious, then we get Krishna's mercy in the form of not getting it. This jato mot tato pot, this idea, well, whatever you do, it's all the same anyway. Well, in one sense, because someone quoted this to me recently. Where was that? In that ISV, Bengali man quoted, Jayata mang prapadyante. And I smelt the, he didn't quote jato mot tato pot, but I smelt the connection, so I quoted it for him. The jato mot tato pot is usually, it literally means as many opinions, that many paths, or as it's usually interpreted, mean all paths lead to the same goal. But that's not exactly what Krishna says. So if we think that, well, if you just say Jai Prabhupada, and that's it, that's all you have to do, then that's misrepresenting Srila Prabhupada, because that's not what he said. He is reputed to have said that, just hold on to my dhoti and I'll take you back to Godhead. But what does the holding on mean? What does it mean? What's our connection? Connection with Guru, as Srila Prabhupada taught, is by vani, by the instructions. So what's our connection? Our connection is to hear them and to execute them to the best of our ability. And it's that the best of our ability that's holding on to the dhoti. And then he'll take us back to Godhead, despite our failings. But if we don't, if we're dishonest, if we're insincere, and we don't, we want to take advantage of Prabhupada and not follow his instructions and just think that we can cheat him, and still he'll be merciful to us. Yeah, he'll be merciful to us by neglecting us. Or he may be merciful to us by giving us, for instance, brain cancer, or having all our children die, or something by which we may be wakened up to our real responsibility. Although if people are so insincere that they recast Srila Prabhupada as some mercy dispensing machine, you don't really have to do anything, you just press the button and you get everything. You can get everything without any endeavor. Srila Prabhupada's not going to be so... He's not going to... Srila Prabhupada's a pure devotee of Krishna. He's not going to cheat Krishna and bring in people who don't want to serve Krishna and mess up the whole Leela. His mercy is that he prepares us for the Leela. How does he prepare us? By making us fully dedicated. It's not only that Srila Prabhupada wanted to see his books distributed, that he said double it every... But what's required to do that, the endeavor required to do that, the surrender required to do that, that hones us as pure devotees, that cleanses out all the attachments in our heart. When we to do that, we have to be so dedicated that there's no room left for any material attachments or... sinful thoughts, and there's no time either for engaging in such things because all time goes to serving Krishna. It's easier to just go along with the flow of society and talk about talk things that people like to hear than what they want to hear. This what Srila Prabhupada is stating here: the offender of the codes of God must always be punished. I don't think anyone wants to hear that, because everyone's an offender to the codes of God. But it has to be said. Just by popular demand, you can't change the laws of karma or the laws of dharma. The universe is set up the way it is, and we are to cooperate with that and be in harmony with that. That's called dharma. To go against that means that we must be punished. If we're not punished by the head of the state, then we're punished in life after life. We can't avoid that. The very idea of punishment in the modern liberal ethos, punishment is misconceived of as something which in itself is wrong, which is why... So I'm told in the prisons in Sweden, or was it Finland? Some of those crazy countries. Really crazy. I mean, they have the highest suicide rates in the world. Prison, if you're given a prison sentence, unless it's in the case of that... what was the name of that guy who shot a bunch of people dead? Berek Breznik or something like that. In Norway? No, he... But 2-3 years ago, he shot a whole bunch of kids dead. Don't know about that? On the island, yeah. The anglicization of his name was Berek. He sometimes... Anyway, in the case of less serious offenders, they're given a prison sentence, but it's up to them whether they go or not. And any time they can walk out. And it's considered that, well... If they did something wrong, it's not really their fault, because it's society's fault. We're to blame, not the offender, because he wasn't brought up properly. He didn't. His mother wasn't a lesbian or something like that. Therefore, he doesn't have a proper character, something like that. Whoops! I might have to go to prison. I hope they send me to prison in Sweden, although for a serious offense like that, I'd probably not go to a voluntary prison. So, yeah, it's a challenge. If we talk that, well, we should be compassionate without defining what is good. What is Srila Prabhupada writing here? The offenders of the codes of God should be punished. This is a compassionate statement. Why is that? Because if people are not punished by the head of the state whose duty is to punish them, then they are punished much worse in future. They have to be punished on and on and on in future lives. So, this is compassion. This is compassion that Srila Prabhupada took the trouble to go out into the world and preach this message and tell people what they need to hear rather than what they want to hear. Of course, sometimes what they need to hear is so antithetical to what they consider in their perverse understanding they consider to be right that you may have to prepare them somewhat before they're ready to hear what they need to hear. Just like some patients in an accident, they're so severely injured, they need an operation, but they're so severely injured that you can't do an operation on them, because to do an operation is to risk killing them. So you have to just try and do something with them to bring them to the stage where they can get the operation, so that they're in such a bad state. That is the challenge that Srila Prabhupada has given us. It's much easier to reconvert Srila Prabhupada into what they've made Jesus into be, some dispense, just believe in the Lord and you will be saved. But what does it mean to believe in him? You have to do what he says. Live as he lived. And we don't have any record of him giving nearly as much instruction as Srila Prabhupada did. One reason we can objectively say that Srila Prabhupada was far greater than even Jesus Christ, we don't say that with any disrespect to Jesus Christ, is that he gave much more knowledge of reality and of how to live in this world and of what should be. Of course, Jesus said he came to uphold the law, so they already had the Jewish law of how to live in this world. But Srila Prabhupada gave the Vedic law, L-A-W. And gave us the mandate to establish that. So it's much easier to pay lip service than to be an actual follower. It's much easier not to distribute books than to distribute them. Or you may think that, well, let's leave a few things out of the books that people don't like, and then it'll be easier to distribute them, or that people will react to it better. But then you might find that there's so much left out, because practically in every sentence, right, Prabhupada says things which are not PC, politically correct. And what might be acceptable today to people in general, but tomorrow it might not be. And then where's the end of it? And then where's the authority of Prabhupada's books? So it is a great challenge not only to distribute these books, but to be ready to substantiate them if people ask us questions. We could make some other books in which we present Krishna consciousness very indirectly and just talk in a very vague ways about love and peace and kindness and compassion and humility without ever defining these terms in terms of surrender to Krishna. And that would be much more popular, because there's this idea that spirituality means to be vague. But that, at least for me, and I'm sure for many others, including probably many of you, was for me the great attraction of Srila Prabhupada. I was so disgusted and fed up with all this so-called spirituality, which is nothing clear whatsoever. And people just talking all things, love, compassion. What do you mean? I mean, what do I do? What's going on in the world? How do I get in this mess, and how do I get out of it? And Srila Prabhupada, everything clear, understandable, authorized. So it's much easier just to do away with all of that and say, well, it's all love, peace, humility, compassion. Oh, and chant Hare Krishna sometimes. But that is not what Prabhupada gave us, and that will not have the same result. It's for transforming spiritual the American world, specifically. Srila Prabhupada wrote that poem, Markine Bhagavat Dharma. The specific point which he emphasized will have the effect of changing them was not actually chanting Hare Krishna. He emphasized, he quoted all these verses from Bhagavatam. Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. He quoted all these verses. This is what will make the difference. Of course, it's not discounting the chanting of the holy name, but to introduce the chanting of the holy name without giving a clear understanding of who is Krishna, who are we, what is our relationship with Krishna, why we are chanting Hare Krishna, will not be very helpful. There are already so many, in India, there are so many Mayavadis who chant. They may chant Hare Krishna mantra or other names of Vishnu, but they're not making any tangible spiritual progress. We think it's great that now there are these kirtans done by people who openly say that they don't believe in Krishna as a person, and they're becoming very popular, and we think, well, that's great progress. Is that progress, or is that another obstacle for us to overcome? When Srila Prabhupada came to America, he said that in one sense, it's easier to present Krishna consciousness here because people are willing to accept what he says. Whereas in India, as soon as you say something, people will come back with their own ideas. So it's becoming more like that in America now also. That if you tell people to chant Hare Krishna for love, of course, say, well, I'm already chanting Hare Krishna. Chanting Hare Krishna, and go to these kirtan concerts and smoke dope, and these great kirtaniers, they also smoke dope. You still use that word dope for marijuana? Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'm a generation out of touch. There are thousands of people who come together and they're all chanting Hare Krishna ecstatically. Who are you to tell me what's chanting of Hare Krishna is all about? They don't need all this philosophy. What are you talking about all this? I'm not sure whether this so-called kirtan is actually an advantage for our preaching of Krishna consciousness, or whether the personality of Kali has manifested himself in the form of chanting Hare Krishna. You may say, well, how can Kali chant Hare Krishna? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that, what is this? Nake tilak galai mala Shonga ek pare bala, which means that you have tilak on your nose, galai mala, you have tulsi mala on your neck, and you have along with you someone else's wife. This is a Kali chela, he says, not a Vaishnava. He's a disciple of Kali Yuga. So Kali, the personality of Kali, he doesn't only come as butchers and genocidalists, he comes as Vaishnavas also. And if we, and Kali is so tricky, he takes up the, he brings Mayavad, which is the absolute antithesis and enemy of Krishna consciousness in this world, and brings it into Vaishnava society to say, well, it's all the same. And brings the Vaishnava philosophy, twists it, and uses it against the actual teachings of Krishna consciousness. Just like if there's a disciple of Kali who's chanting Hare Krishna, you say, that's a disciple of Kali. He's not a Vaishnava, he's an offender. He's not properly presenting Krishna. Oh, you're offensive. The idea that anyone who's chanting Hare Krishna, even if it's nama parada, even if they are clearly offensive to Shastra, to Krishna, to the acharyas, they're chanting Hare Krishna, that's it. So if you say anything against them, then you're an offender, and then there's everything cut off. No discussion. So it becomes more and more difficult to preach Krishna. Better to preach now, because it's getting more and more difficult. Kali's not sleeping. So there are a few thoughts about Srila Prabhupada and his mission and his merciful, compassionate straightforwardness, which will always be misinterpreted by the offenders who want to present themselves as saints. They'll say, the syndrome of Kali Yuga, that those who are criminals will be considered most respectable. Okay, you're up. Anything I need to know about Indian politics, I ask either you or Basu Ghosh. How many in newly elected MLAs, members of the lower house in... How many of them, or what percentage of them, have either severe criminal records or are under trial, which means it goes on forever and ever, for severe criminal offenses? More than 60%. There was some suggestion that such persons should be debarred from running from office, but because the people who are making the laws are that type anyway, it'll never make it into the statute book. So it's in India, at least, it's widely recognized that the police, the gangsters, and the politicians, they're all the same clan, but they're just in different, they're all working together. It's well known. So when the criminals become the respected people, and those who are actually wanting to do good for human society, What happens to them? Then the criminals call them criminals. And what is it? It is folly to be wise where ignorance is bliss. What can you do in such a situation? Well, we must always be guided by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Not be overcome by sentimentalism, evil sentimentalism in the name of Vaishnavism. It's a great challenge to be a follower of Srila Prabhupada in the present time. There are all kinds. Any neophyte or anyone who knows how to type in a computer in Kali Yuga, in the present age, they become a philosopher and a religious preacher and an authority. What on what? Because they can type in a computer. Do, 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 do. And people think, it must be true because it's on the internet. Very difficult time. You want to be a people think, oh, they get a book. Something nice. Let's look on the internet. So many things. So one has to find the essence. The essence is in these books, and who personifies and lives these books. It's not easy to do so. It's much easier to make a show of doing such. It's not much easier to be make a show of being a follower of Christ than to actually be a follower of Christ. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, or protests, please? I just. Yes. Contradiction, is it? Seems there's a contradiction. Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, the statement is the offender of the codes of God is always punished, but we find that the personality of Kali is absolved because he surrendered to Maharaj Parikshit. So does the king have some leeway to decide? Yes, within the codes of Dharma, because within the codes of Dharma, a person who surrenders is not to be punished. So you might say that, well, you can be a multiple offender and just say, I surrender every time. But surrender means you, as Parikshit did with the personality of Kali, that you have to follow. It's like for first-time offenders. If you agree to follow certain restrictions, then we won't punish you this time. But a person who is given clemency on the grounds of being a first-time offender, who again offends, is going to be punished even more severely. I heard recently Srila Prabhupada, he gave an example of himself going to court as an accused when he was doing his business, that he had a license for producing alcohol, and one of his managers, he misused that license and was producing extra on the side for selling for his own profit, and then Prabhupada, as the owner of the business, came to court. And Srila Prabhupada said that, well, I admit that it's my responsibility, but I wasn't aware of this, and in future I'll keep a proper check on what's going on within my factory. And Prabhupada said, I was immediately dismissed for a first-time offender. Although he could have been punished. So yeah, within the laws of Dharma, it's punishment must be there, but there is also scope for clemency. There are principles, but there's plenty of nuances also. And sometimes one just has to decide, because life and the various situations it presents, it's so multifaceted and can be so complex that it can be difficult in a certain circumstance to understand which principle of Dharma one should follow in a specific situation that one finds oneself. There's a term for that. It's called Dharma Sankat. And practically the whole Mahabharata is made up of that. The Bhagavad Gita is made up of that. Should Arjun, as a kshatriya, he should fight, but as a family member and as a disciple, he shouldn't fight. So it's two principles of Dharma come in contradiction. So probably the whole Mahabharata is full of that. And it gives us some idea of how we should face such situations. You may say, consult your guru. He might not be there. You have to decide yourself. Or you might You might decide that your guru is saying the wrong thing. Happened in the case of Bali Maharaj. Shukra, he said the right thing to Bali Maharaj in terms of his being the guru of the demons. As the guru of the demons, Shukra's advice to Bali to withdraw his promised charity to Vamana was correct. But on the ultimate spiritual platform which Bali Maharaj was operating, but he didn't even argue on that platform. He just argued on the platform of sadharan dharma, or worldly dharma. He said, well, I'd rather go to hell than to withdraw my word to a brahmana, which is another valid principle. And he did, actually. I mean, he went down to the lower planets. So it's a vast topic, dharma. But it's all resolved in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, sect 66. But even to understand that, to understand what it means to give up all varieties of dharma, to properly understand that requires great understanding of what dharma means. Sometimes our devotees think, well, give up all varieties of dharma, we don't have to bother about dharma. But first of all, it doesn't mean that you're just some kind of loafer. You ever have a Prabhupada use that term often? Loafer class. It doesn't mean that you're just some kind of, you don't have any sense of dharma. Well, then you didn't give it up. You have to have a sense of dharma before you can renounce it. If you don't have any sense of dharma, then there's no question of renouncing it. Dharma is that which distinguishes human from animals. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanyame tat pashubhya naranam dharmo hite sham pashubhya naranam dharmena hina pashubhya naranam dharmena hi. Hina, well, I'm getting mixed up now. What is it? Dharmo hite shamadiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. Humans and animals both eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So, the special prerogative of human life is dharma. Lacking that, humans and animals are just the same. So if we didn't come up to the human platform, we can hide. And we talk about, well, I don't care about dharma. We're above that. We're not above it. We're below it. We didn't even come to the human platform. First, we have to be human beings. There has to be some intelligence. Intelligence means not how to live sinfully, but refined intelligence. There has to be morality, not as defined by animals, but morality as defined by Shastra. Yeah, so anything else? Yeah, all right. Is it? They're also convicted felons, in the members of Congress, and those who aren't didn't get caught yet, or they paid enough so they didn't get caught yet. They're also convicted felons. It should be self-evident. It was one of those things that was so self-evident, I guess, that it didn't make it into the Constitution, that criminals shouldn't take the role of the leaders of society, and they're discussing moral issues. Should there be abortion or not? Hare Krishna. It's probably like that in all the countries of the world. What a situation. Hmm. Rampant lesbianism. Well, it's more prestigious, isn't it? You have more social rights as a lesbian. So the rampant increase. It's like in India, because the lower class of society, they're given special privileges. So there are whole groups of people who are doing riots and protests to be recognized as the lowest class of society. It's everything's upside down in Kali Yuga. So to be a lesbian is, it'll probably come to the state that you won't be allowed to run for parliament or congress unless you're either a transsexual or a transvestite or a lesbian or something like that. It may come to that. The men have been dominating, so now it's time for the... Who knows? It's just... The lesbians take more books than gay men. Is it? Yeah, I mean, we have to deal with them also. They come to Krishna consciousness. Is homosexuality natural? There seems to be a marked increase in it with the propaganda that it's good, natural, and okay. How is that? It's a big topic. It may be also due to all the hormones in the food and everything. They put female hormones in the... They inject it into the cows to make them give more milk, and that goes into the humans. And another thing I've noticed, I'm mostly in India, is that it's very common nowadays for young girls, like 5 years old, to have all hairs all over their body and little mustaches. That's in India. I don't know if it's like that here. It's like the girls are becoming like men. And one disciple of mine in India who's a doctor, she's, I don't know, 40, 50-ish, she said, and I asked her for references, but I guess she just got it from discussing with other doctors. She said that one reason they think that women are having symptoms of men is because they wear clothes like men. They they're trained to be like men, competitive instead of cooperative. And so that's one factor why they're physically becoming like men. And there could be credence. Because you are what you think. Your subtle body, as your subtle body changes, your gross body also changes. As, for instance, we can see with Colonel Sanders, the picture of is them on Kentucky Fried Chicken. He looks like a chicken. And... it still struck in my mind, I sometimes quote this, that once in England we were on traveling Sankirtan, and we came one evening, we drove into a town, Leicester was the name of the town, and there was a man selling chicken, fried chicken on the side of the street on some stall, and his face was just, it was so striking, his face looked just like a chicken. And I remember seeing cartoons in my childhood which were striking by their veracity, that's a horse owner walking with their horse and the face looking like a horse. And you see people, they become so attached to their dog that they look like a dog. So it may well be that as girls are trained to be like boys, they actually physically get the characteristics and vice versa. And there's this thing called gender streaming or something in which they want to eradicate differences between boys and girls. That boys shouldn't be given soldiers to play with and girls shouldn't be given little baby dolls. They should have the same kind of toy. There should be no difference in their outlook whatsoever. There's Mayavad come home, isn't it? Really? That's applied Mayavad. No difference between men and women. And it's so crazy that women have to go off and fight in the army. I mean, to me it sounds horrible. You don't send your mother out to fight or your sister out to fight in a war. What if they get captured? Are there any stories of that, of them getting captured in Afghanistan? What do they do with them? And there's the soldiers, you know, the male soldiers, you know, they're robust, strong men being fed beefsteak every day. And they're supposed to share the same quarters with women and be monks. These people, I mean, it's just no common. I mean, they get prosecuted for rape. And they're sitting, they're lying in a bunk. The next bunk is a woman, young woman. What do you expect they do? And if the women are the same as the men, then they shouldn't be rapeable, right? They should be able to fight back, but they're not. It's so insane. We could all go to prison for this, probably, for even discussing such things. Niranjan Maharaj told me this about 10 years ago, that because the women have to become firemen now, that they have to lower the requirements, because the women become firemen, but they're not. One requirement for a fireman is they have to be able to pick up and easily manipulate the hose which is running, but hardly any women could do it. So they made the hose of less capacity, which means it decreases their ability to fight fires, so that women can be in the fire brigade. Now, isn't it? In the military, they must have lowered the... Definitely women don't have the same endurance as men. So it becomes a liability for the men. Is it wrong to send women to the military? Yes. One word answer. You may have a different opinion. I'm speaking on the basis of Shastra and what anyone, even up to a generation ago, with maybe the exception of Gloria Steinem, would have considered to be a self-evident fact. Did the Pandavas are on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Was Draupadi out there fighting? Was Kunti? She was a strong-spirited woman. She didn't go to the fight. Subhadra didn't go to the fight. Kunti didn't go to the fight. You would have sent Draupadi to fight. If required, they can protect themselves. They're not very competent to protect themselves. That's why there's the men, kshatriyas especially, are supposed to protect the whole society. Things have changed nowadays, yeah, and that's why we're saying that we should get back to what's sensible and true and proper. I think it's quite likely that Islam will pick up greatly in the Western world, because they have a clear sense of right and wrong, clear theology. They're very, people are fed up of all this. There may come a stage where people get fed up of all this vagueness and want something clear to follow. And there's a clear distinction between men and women. And they're also allowed to eat meat. So it's quite possible. It is the fastest growing religion, I believe, in England. People used to become, when they used to become criminals and in protest against society, and now many of them are becoming Muslims, which is maybe better for them, unless they become Muslim terrorists. But I don't know. If I didn't have to eat meat, I'd probably, if I had a choice between becoming a Muslim and a and a glorified hippie in the name of an average American. I think I'd probably become Muslim, because by Krishna's mercy, that choice isn't there. But there's theism. There's a clear sense of brotherhood. One reason why people are so animied out, if you know that word. Anime means you just can't fit into anything, which gives so many mental problems. It's because there's no clear places for people in society. They don't know what they're supposed to do, or where they fit in, who they are. They're supposed to be like Rambo, or they can't be like Rambo, and they don't know what they're supposed to be doing. It could be. I'm not recommending that you become Muslims, but I'm just saying that it has some appeal. You can understand its appeal. Not very sophisticated understanding of reality. Suffers from many of the theological problems that Christianity does. Probably not as many. There's a lot of problems with Christianity. But yeah, that major fault is there, or lacking, is that it's a one-time chance. You're here one time, and either you become a Muslim and you get delivered, or that's it, you're finished forever. So that's a major flaw. I don't know if the Sunnis won't allow the Shias, or vice versa, or they're going to have a fight up there too, but major problem there. But there are some good things there also. Hare Krishna. I think we should finish. I didn't look at the clock for since almost 1 hour. So Hare Krishna.